Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. You know, I've long been interested in dreams. We all dream. Some people do it more than others. I dream a lot, and I often remember them when I wake up, at least for a few moments until they seem to vaporize like mist. But what amazes me is the content of my dreams. They're very real and usually populated with fully formed people who look and act like no one I know or ever knew, in clearly defined places that I've never been, and doing a wide variety of things that often don't relate in any way that I can tell to my waking life. It's like I'm in a short movie, and usually two or three of them a night. Some cognitive scientists study dreams, but I'm not so interested in the cognitive science aspect of it. In other words, what region of the brain do dreams originate in? That seems to be a detail to me that sidesteps the larger question of where on earth does this tremendously real and varied content come from? I'm not talking about the meaning of dreams or what prompts them. I mean the actual content itself. To me, it's a real mystery and one that science doesn't seem to want to touch because they have no way to approach it. So it's rare, I believe, for a reputable university to bring onto its faculty a dream researcher, someone who studies dreams from a non-physiological standpoint. In 2022, Johns Hopkins University hired Dr. Dylan Selterman as an associate teaching professor in its Department of Psychological and Brain Sciences. And there he heads the Dream Lab, an acronym that stands for Dreams, Relationships, Emotions, Attraction, and Morality. Imagine that took a few minutes to figure out. So, welcome, Dr. Selterman.
It's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate you being on. So the name of your lab implies that relationships between people are the main fuel for dream content. But from what I've read about your work, there's a lot more to it than that. Can you give us a quick overview, I mean, just very briefly, of the landscape of dreams in terms of their meaning and what drives them?
Sure. Well, to start, there's really no grand unified theory of dreams that all scientists have bought into. I think the best we can say at this point is that there's a bunch of different possible explanations for what explains dreams in terms of the landscape and what's motivating us to have dreams in the first place. Some scientists believe, and there's actually a lot of evidence to support this idea, that dreams merely reflect a kind of continuity between when we're awake and when we're asleep. So dreams are a reflection of the type of things that we experience while we're awake. And then there's other theories that have to do with things like rehearsal and problem solving, in the sense that people might dream about things that they're struggling with and need to work through, or they're trying to prepare for things that they might encounter and experience afterwards when they wake up. And then, as you mentioned, there's also a strong connection between dreams and social relationships, which is what my research has uncovered, as well as some other researchers who study dreams. And this is the idea that dreams may help to facilitate social bonds and for people to kind of consolidate information about the others in their lives that are meaningful to them. So this could include people like close friends, significant others, family members, etc.
Yeah, so as you've been saying, one of the main theories about dream content is that it's a subconscious processing of the events and circumstances of your real life in which you're trying to figure out what to do or to make sense of things. And we have the idea, and it's probably true, of Indian shamans or chiefs going off and inducing a dream state to try to figure out a path to take for their people. And we have the phrase, let me sleep on it, you know. And I think that the reality processing idea probably accounts for a lot of dreams, but by no means all, as you said. So it's definitely not the case for me. You think it's probably the most prominent driver of dream content, just in general, to process your life and kind of try to figure out things in a subconscious way?
It certainly could be. And we do have a lot of evidence of people dreaming about things that are very important in terms of their general life goals or in terms of things that they're trying to work through. It's also important to remember that if we look at dreams themselves, dreams are very social. So dreams are not just about processing information, but specifically about other people. Most of the time when we dream, we're dreaming about the people that we're close to. So not just random strangers, although strangers do sometimes appear in dreams. Most of the time, we're dreaming about others that we know and are close with in situations that we normally find ourselves in. And so this could be about consolidating information, and it could also be about promoting the bonds that people have with each other.
I'd say, you know, that probably varies from person to person, but I'd say the great majority of the people who populate my dreams are people I've never seen before. And it's only rare that it's someone I know who's clearly identifiable as someone I know. You know, so kind of switching subjects a little bit, I suspect we actually remember all or at least many of our dreams. That's what I think. Because sometimes a fragment of a dream I had a year or more ago and haven't thought of since will pop into my waking mind out of nowhere. And sometimes in a dream, I'll pick up where I left off with a dream that I remember in the current dream that I had a long time ago. So maybe that varies from person to person. I don't know. Some people I know claim to hardly ever dream. Maybe they don't, or maybe they just don't remember them. So what do you think? Do we remember our dreams whether we know it or not?
I think one way to explain it is that we all have dreams all the time, although there are some rare exceptions for people who have certain very specific neurological disorders and they don't have dreams, but that's very rare. Most of us do have dreams all the time. And then the trick is that we only remember a small fraction of them. And I think what you're describing is a kind of recollection of dreams as memories. And in that case, it could be that the recollection of the dream is tangentially related, but not exactly the same. And this is actually a reflection of how our memory normally works for things that happen while we're awake. So one myth about memory in general is that it's high fidelity, that we have a kind of clear recording of things as they happen, and then we can recall them even sometimes years later without any trouble. But the recollection of memory is actually a very active process. And often what happens is through the process of recalling memories, they're distorted. So it's likely the case that the same thing is happening with our dreams, that we have dreams, we might remember parts of them, we might remember the whole thing right away, but they tend to fade. And so when we're remembering dreams, we're not really remembering them exactly as they occurred. We're remembering through the process of recalling, which distorts them a little bit. And that, you know, it's the same thing happens for things that we remember while we're awake. But we can improve the quality of our memory for dreams by making a habit of recording them immediately while we wake up. So a lot of people these days, they wake up and they tend to kind of immediately forget about their dreams because they're not really paying attention to them right away. And, you know, people wake up and they look at their phone, they start scrolling and they look at email. And so the dreams fade quickly because of those actions we take while we wake up. And if we really want to get good at remembering our dreams, it's kind of like building a healthy lifestyle habit. So you got to have a pad of paper and a pen like next to your bed and just write those dreams down immediately when you wake up. And then when you wake up fully, you can remember them better through that process.
So the other thing, too, I think that happens is that I only remember the dream that I was having just as I woke up. It's rare that I remember a dream prior to that. And so
right.
I think you only consciously remember a fragment of your dreams. But and also, I think if you remember them, it kind of makes it a waking memory. So it kind of doubles down on it or it implants it in a different part of your brain. Who knows? You know, what do I know? But it seems like it converts it into a different type of memory. But the thing I was talking about earlier is where some dream from a year ago that I don't have the slightest recollection of consciously will suddenly pop into my mind as a full color fragment of that little movie, you know, and
right.
It startles me sometimes because I would have had no recollection of having had that dream until it pops into my mind. And it does make me wonder whether your dreams are remembered in the same way that your conscious experience is remembered and you don't really remember it until something reminds you of it. And whether you have a whole parallel set of memories that are dream memories, I have no idea. But
yeah,
you know, again, this stuff is kind of new to research. And so someone like me who's an armchair observer of themselves can have almost, semi-valid opinions about it, I suppose. Well, let's talk about another thing. I basically never have nightmares. I've had maybe 10 nightmares in my whole life, but sometimes in dreams I'm in scary situations. And the reason they aren't a nightmare is that in my dreams, I'm always aware that I'm dreaming. I'm there, but I'm like an uninvolved observer. It's not what I think is called lucid dreaming, in which you'd be able to direct the dream. I can't. I'm actually asleep. But as a psychologist, what do you think that detachment means?
Yeah.
Is that common?
Well, there's a lot here. So the first point about nightmares, and you're saying that you don't really have nightmares. And I think that raises an interesting point about the way that researchers might define what a nightmare is, because there's no objective indicator for whether a dream is a nightmare or not. It's kind of in the eye of the beholder, so to speak. So if a person says they had a nightmare, then it's a nightmare. But it's a very fine line between a dream that just has some unpleasantness to it versus a full-on nightmare. And I understand completely what you mean, especially in the sense that a lot of dreams that people commonly report having contain negative emotion to some extent, or situations that are unnerving or scary. And whether or not they're a nightmare, I think, is up for interpretation. One other thing to note here about the way that you're kind of experiencing those is that you are aware to some extent that you're in a dream. And just to clarify, when we say dreams are lucid, or a person is lucid during dreams, it means that they are in a dream and they're fully aware that they are in a dream. And I think what you're describing is something a little bit different, where you're kind of in observer mode in the dream, like you're kind of watching it happen, and maybe you have a little bit of awareness that you're not fully in it. I know exactly what you're talking about because I have those dreams too. Mm-hmm. I don't know how common that is. I think that to some extent, this might be a function of individual differences in personality traits. So some people who maybe are more prone to seeing other people or other situations as an observer in their dreams might also be more likely to experience lucidity. I have, you know, had lucid dreams throughout my life. And on the other hand, it could be some other different types of personality traits that are promoting this. We really don't know the answer, but I think to your question, those dreams do happen. It's not like a once in a blue moon type thing.
Well, you were speculating that may be related to personality type. And I mean, just to get personal here, I tend to live in my head more than in my gut or whatever. I mean, you know, I have instincts and so on, but I predominantly live in my head. So I think that I'm an observer of my life to some extent, and maybe more than the average. And so I think that maybe transcribes over into the way I dream too. So there are some themes that occur in my dreams and have done so throughout my life. And I tended to think that they were unusual until I did a little research in advance of this program and was reading about a couple of other prominent dream researchers like yourself, what other people have found in their research. And it turns out the themes in my dreams are pretty darn common in other people too. So one I think is the fairly common one of being late to something, like to class or to catch a plane. And a common variant is that it's the first day of classes in college and I have no idea where my classes are or what time they start. And I'm running from room to room, looking quickly in and going, no, it's not, you know, Greek history. You know, it's not philosophy or whatever. I'm looking for math class or whatever. So that's actually not too far off from the reality of my start at college. But how common is that particular theme?
Yeah, I would say very common. And something else that you mentioned is that you thought the dreams you were having were kind of esoteric. But then when you started poking around a little bit, you realized that lots of people have these dreams. And I think that's a common thing that happens when people are reflecting on their dreams, is they think that they're weird. And then we discovered, oh, actually, a lot of people have this type of dream. Another one is the teeth falling out dream. I know a lot of people who tell me that it's very weird that they have this dream. And I'm like, no, actually, a lot of people have this dream. So you're definitely not alone. And maybe that reflects the tendency that we have to not share our dreams with other people. So it's kind of a world in which we're living in dream pluralistic ignorance. You know, nobody is talking about them. So we don't realize just how common these things are. And as for the dream specifically about lateness, this is also a very common theme because we are always trying to be on time for things. And one of the theories that I mentioned earlier about how we dream and why we dream is to mentally prepare us for things that could happen when we wake up and to kind of deal with problems before they happen. This is one of the things that I think makes humans unique as a species, is our ability to engage in very long-term planning. And that's part of what dreams are doing for us. They alert us to things that might go wrong if we don't prepare correctly. And so one of the main things that comes up for people like you and me is we need to be on time for meetings. And so the dream is kind of just alerting you to that. But then you also mentioned an aspect of dreams that involves school. And this is another very common thing that comes up in people's dreams, especially around the time when the school year begins. I still have these dreams, and a lot of people that I know still report having them even decades after they have finished as a student. So it's not like they're in school and they're trying to prepare for school work, but I think that it speaks to the lasting psychological imprint that school has on us, a negative imprint, I would add.
Yeah, so I would say, I mean, everything you just said makes perfect sense. I would say also, maybe more broadly, it's kind of a general sense of your life being a little out of control. I mean, maybe you're behind in your work, or, you know, or there are things coming down the track that you're not sure you're going to be ready for, or that kind of thing. And so it's kind of a general sense of fear of being out of control, you know. So, you know, and I guess that theme, too, is also a good example of dreams that are really connected to your real life, as opposed to things that I was describing earlier that don't, to me at least, appear to have any connection to my real life. That particular theme is one that, you know, clearly is analyzable, you know, let's say, as being something connected to your everyday life. So another thing I think is in that category is that I find myself either naked or just in my underwear in a public place. And other people, for some reason, don't seem to notice that, but I'm trying hard to hide it. You know, I'm looking for a potted plant to jump behind or whatever it be. And I don't know how I got that way. That is, how I became naked in a crowd or whatever. And if I have to analyze that, I think it might mean that in some ways I'm kind of an imposter, and maybe I'm considered to be good at what I do for a living outside this radio show, but I know I'm not as expert or knowledgeable at it as I should be or as people think I am. And I sometimes feel like I'm hiding that, to get very personal about it. But, you know, it's not a major thing, but a little bit around the edges, right? So is that one you've encountered in other people?
Sure. Yeah, this is another very common one. And you're right to note that thematically it fits with the other dreams about being late for things. It's about what could go wrong when we wake up and kind of trying to mentally prepare for those possibilities. And you're right that it may reflect some degree of insecurity. You mentioned, you know, this idea of imposter syndrome. I think that definitely resonates with a lot of people. The idea is we're trying to think about ways in which our reputation is being managed. And, you know, we want other people to respect us. We want other people to like us. We want them to, you know, think that we're making a good contribution to society. And in some sense, it could serve as a motivating factor for us to perform at a high level when we wake up. And it's interesting to note, again, kind of the parallels between dream science and other aspects of psychological science. So research shows that a little bit of performance-related anxiety actually does boost performance rather than nothing at all, and also in comparison to too much. So there's kind of an ideal, like a Goldilocks phenomenon here with performance-related anxiety. And you could make the case that a little bit of performance-related anxiety in dreams is serving a similar function, in the sense that it's trying to boost our ultimate performance after we wake up.
Yeah, with me, that one is just occasional. It's, you know, it's not a big deal, and I'm perfectly aware that it's a dream, but I do wonder about it, because, like, I would not normally wander around in a crowd in my underwear and say, why am I doing this? You know, but anyways, you're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with Dr. Dylan Selterman, who is a professor of psychology at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, and in particular about dreams. He's the director of the Dream Lab there at Johns Hopkins, and is one of the experts in the obscure science of what constitutes and drives dreams. So, you know, it's funny, I don't normally talk about myself so much in these shows, but here I'm talking about myself and the examples of dreams that I have, because that's all I know about dreams. You know, so another thing is that the nature of my dreams has changed over time. When I was younger and more energetic and possibly more creative, my dreams were more entertaining. Often they were very funny. I mean, sometimes I even woke up laughing. But now they're seldom entertaining or even all that interesting. They're more mundane and seem to relate more often to the day-to-day details of my life. But I still have lots of dreams that, while they're not that interesting, still take place in strange places, and the people in them, as I said, are still not people I know. Have you ever been able to track people to see if the nature of their dreams changes over a long period of time?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'll start off by saying that there's very few studies that actually track people's dreams in a longitudinal sense over time to see how they change. most of the dream research that I've seen, in fact, nearly all of it that I've seen personally, is cross-sectional, meaning we're only studying dreams at one point in time. And of the research that's more longitudinal, usually those are case studies. So you have, let's say, one research participant who records their dreams over a period of years or decades, and then the researchers will try to analyze that one specific case. But there's very little that we can do to generalize from those findings just from one particular person. But we can speculate a little bit about what might be happening in terms of your observations of your own dream experiences and what might be happening with other people. I think that there's definitely some evidence that kids just in general are more kind of carefree, and adults, they think more about responsibilities. You know, they think more about things like paying the mortgage and, you know, how much gas prices are. So in that sense, I think if we operate on the assumption that there's this continuity between dreams and our waking experiences, then the change that you experience and the change that other people might experience reflects that. So in adulthood, our dreams might be more mundane and might focus on things that have to do with day-to-day details of life, because those details are now more important and we are encumbered by things that we do not have to really worry about when we're young. And there's also the idea that creativity tends to decline over time. And this is something, again, going back to what we were talking about in terms of school, this could be a function of schools kind of killing creativity to some extent. So maybe we just have more ability to connect things that are disparate and separate from each other, you know, coloring outside the lines, thinking outside the box, and then that changes over time. And, you know, most of us, the average person, is probably less creative than when we were still a kid in school.
I realize, too, from what you're saying, obviously it's hard to get a whole core of people to do long-lasting longitudinal studies over a period of years. That's just not in the cards, and it's probably hard to get funding for such a thing anyway. Another theme that appeared occasionally for many years with me was that I could fly, or at least levitate. Mm-hmm. I mean, I couldn't fly like a bird or like Superman. It was more like I could jump up and do something like a breaststroke, really, which would get me over a house or a patch of trees in a minute or so and away from something that might be chasing me, or just for fun. And I could also levitate just by hopping into the air and holding there a foot or so off the ground. Or I could do that breaststroke-like maneuver and rise up several feet in the air and hang there. And I did that to amuse myself in the dream or to astound other people around me. And it gave me a big kick in the dream. But a few years ago, I quit having those dreams and I never do it anymore. And I think that change is related in some way to the end of the funny dreams, in that my life was just really just more mundane. There's less room for creativity and play. So do you think those things are connected? And also, is that a common theme in dreams like we've been talking about?
Yeah, they very well could be connected. And yes, it is something that a lot of people report having in their dreams, is the ability to fly or maybe even just levitate. I've had those dreams myself. They definitely happen. I saw one study that showed there are some personality or cognitive correlates with flying dreams. So some people are more likely to experience them based on, you know, psychological traits. But it could be the case that we're just kind of more creative and thinking about things like supernatural powers in dreams. And again, you bring up this idea that you had those dreams in the past and now don't have them as much. And I think to whatever extent people want to have certain types of experiences in their dreams, that's something that also can be accomplished through lucid dreaming, which we talked about a little bit earlier. The idea being that when you are lucid, when you're aware that you're dreaming, then you can have more control and do things like flying or seeing in 360 degrees, or, you know, whatever your imagination wants, really, wherever you want the dream to go.
So you're a psychologist and your research interests are much broader than dreaming. Actually, they include interpersonal attraction and relationships and sexuality and morals and ethics and political psychology and happiness and well-being. In fact, I think you're a thoroughgoing romantic, sir. But you do have a dream lab and students to support. And faculty researchers survive in large part on grants, usually from government agencies, but also from private foundations and corporations, gifts and other sources. Is it hard to get funding for dream research?
It definitely is. I think there's very little in terms of large grants for studying dreams. And most of the people I know who get funding for their work on dreams are cognitive neuroscientists and doctors who study sleep. So they're primary research interests as far as their CV is concerned are things like what the brain is doing while we sleep. And then they kind of sneak in the dreams a little bit so they can satisfy their curiosity about that. But there's no big NIH grants to study dreams. There are some small grants, and I've applied for some. Those are also very competitive. And, you know, I think mostly what we rely on are we rely on volunteers who are interested in helping out by contributing to science, even if they're not getting a lot of compensation in return. And the methods that we use have to be low cost as well. So we're asking people to record their dreams using diaries rather than bringing people into the lab and having them sleep in the lab, which we just don't have the funds to do. But we can still get some good research done with volunteer participants.
So I'm going to apologize for asking you this question because we just have a minute or so left. But going back to my saying originally that the people and places in my dreams are usually unfamiliar to me, I mean, at times they'll even speak in a foreign language like French, which I can speak at a rudimentary level, but the characters are speaking quickly in what I recognize as fluent French, and I can understand to some extent, but I couldn't speak that well. You know, I mean, using, you know, the subjunctive tense or, you know, past pluperfect or whatever. So to me, the really key question is, where does this highly specific and detailed content actually come from that I couldn't invent if I wanted to? Does it exist somewhere outside my own mind and I just tap into it for a while or what? I mean, so that's the kind of question that scientists immediately shy away from as from a hot stove, I think. But that to me is the real mystery. Any thoughts?
Okay, so I do have some thoughts on this. And the first thing I'll say is that when we as researchers talk about the extensions of the mind, we're not talking about something metaphysical or spiritual. We're not talking about something like the collective unconscious, which used to be a popular idea. Carl Jung, I believe, was the first to coin this idea that we're all kind of tapping into something and that the dream is a reflection of that other stuff that we're not consciously aware of while we're awake. But what I would say is that there is actually a tangible physical connection between our minds and other things out there in the world, other people. Maybe we overhear some people on the subway talking in French, like you said, and, you know, maybe that makes its way into our dream. And this would support the continuity hypothesis, the idea that dreams are a reflection of our waking experiences. It could also be the case that there's a part of you that wants to get better at speaking French, and maybe it's just the dream's way of saying, hey, listen, there's other people out there that would be fun to talk to. You don't know these people yet, but, you know, if you get better at speaking this language, you'll be able to converse with them. And so it might not be so far-fetched as we're thinking here. Maybe it's something more tangible. Maybe it is something that is just existing in your mind, but also an extension of the things that we experience and the things that we interact with and the people that we interact with while we're awake. That would be my suggestion.
Dylan, we're going to have to leave it there, but let me tell you out there, listeners, to just Google Johns Hopkins Dream Lab, and you'll quickly get to Dr. Seltzman's lab, where you can learn a lot more about what we've been talking about. Well, Dylan, thanks so much for being on with us here in American Variety. It's been very interesting.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is a great conversation.
Yep, and thanks to all of you out there for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.